Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Featuring Joe Sweeney from Thinking Sideways podcast and filmmaker Vincent Caldoni. This is The Shocking Details.
Hey there. Welcome to another episode of The Shocking Details. I'm Joe, joined by
Vincent Caldoni,
as always. And we have a not particularly shocking episode for you this week, actually. We're going to, you know, since we've had so many shockers in the past few weeks, we thought we'd unshock for a little bit.
This is the moderately shocking details.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, not exactly shocking, but no, it's, you know, there's some shocker stuff in here, I guess. I don't know. But I got onto this because I was thinking that I wanted to do a story about the lost city of Paititi, which is, you know, somewhere in South America, like kind of in the headwaters of the Amazon River.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, this reminds me, I just couldn't do a story about that without talking about a few other of my favorite lost cities. And I know you got a few favorite lost cities as well, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely. So we're just going to talk about like several lost cities, I think, if that's okay with our listeners. Oop, I'm not hearing anything.
Not?
nobody is saying anything. So I guess it is okay. All right. Let's. Yeah, so in no particular order, let's see. I wanted to talk a little bit about the lost city of Z, which is a pretty cool one.
That's a fascinating story.
It really is. There's a book out about it, which probably most of our listeners have heard of. I have a copy. I've read it. And they made a movie out of it, too. Well, they took a little bit of license, I thought, especially at the end. A little bit. They did. Big time at the end, really. But Z was assigned its name by Colonel Percy Fawcett, who was a British explorer and a surveyor. And he did some amazing stuff, actually, back
pretty
in the
interesting
day.
Interesting guy.
And after reading the book and seeing some of the ordeal that he and his men went through to explore and survey all these rivers and territories in the furthest reaches of like Bolivia and Peru and the jungles and stuff, being just, you know, menaced by natives and devoured by bugs. It was, it's just remarkable what those guys did, you know? But it's thought that Fawcett was influenced in his thinking about the city of Z by stories that he'd heard from various indigenous people that he spoke with on his many explorations.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's believed that the city actually did exist, but it was just undiscovered at that time. This is like, you know, early 20th century. There was plenty of undiscovered stuff in South America at that time. And there still is today, of course, too.
You want to talk about something I just discovered?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I discovered it or not, but it just went off in my mind like a bomb. Percy Fawcett was English.
Yeah.
So he was going to the lost city of Zed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. It's Zed. Yeah, that's
so I'm sitting here thinking about the lost city of Z, but it's actually Zed. Galaxy brain. Oh, no, I never thought of that.
That is a good point, man. Yeah, Zed is dead, right? I mean, so yeah, I mean, because Zed baby. Is dead. Yeah. But Fawcett led a couple of expeditions to find the city of Zed. But unfortunately, he disappeared on the second journey. That was along with his son, Jack. Mm-hmm. And Jack brought his friend along, Raleigh Rimmel, who also vanished without a trace. And
that's true.
Yeah, they did. That was it. We had no idea what happened to them, although the movie had an interesting take on their eventual fate. Who knows? That might have happened. But I don't want to. Yeah. I don't want to spoil it for anybody.
No, let's not spoil the movie. I was thinking about that too. We can't spoil it, but yeah.
Just so you know. Yeah.
If you do watch the movie, just know that what is presented as fact in the third act of that film is it's supposed to happen, but it's not the truth.
No. No, it's not. But anyway, I still recommend the movie, though. It was a pretty well done, I think, adaptation of the book. But the city that he might, it's believed that the city that he had been told about that he was seeking was eventually found. It was, and I'm not sure if I'm doing this right, but Kuhikugu.
I don't know how to pronounce it either.
Yeah, I think it's Kuhikugu. That's a literal pronunciation of the transliteration from another language that somebody did. So, you know,
yeah,
it's 100% guaranteed to not be correct. But anyway, but it was this city was located in Brazil, or actually, I shouldn't say was. It still is. It's there. It's just nobody lives there because it's ruins. But it's near the headwaters of the Xingu River.
Xingu.
Is it Xingu? Okay.
Yeah, if it's transliterated to Portuguese, I think that's how that would be.
Is it Xingu in Portuguese? Okay. Yeah. I'm not up on my Portuguese. Yeah. Okay.
The city of Kuhikugu was finally discovered by Westerners not long after Percy Fawcett disappeared. And it's a pretty actually interesting notion, interesting place, because the site that they uncovered contains the ruins of an estimated 20 towns and villages, which may have housed as many as 50,000 people.
Yeah.
So Percy Fawcett was sort of right. I don't know that, just having read up on this myself, I think what he was expecting to see was not what was there. These would have been wood huts, wooden reed huts. It would have been a pretty big place, a pretty sprawling place. There was
50,000 people. Yeah.
Yeah. It's nothing to shake a stick at. And there's evidence of like mound building and other, you know, types of environmental modifications that would have went on. But mostly we know it as a, you know, place because of like post holes and things like that. It's not probably the vast stashes of silver and gold and mighty stone temples that he was thinking that he was going to find.
Yeah, I know. That's a little disappointing. You know, you could think of it like he's hearing these stories from the natives. So from their perspective, even something like this was like pretty fantastic, you know, pretty amazing. But you know, his definition of amazing was not quite the same as theirs. So, you know. But you know, still, again, 50,000 people. You know, especially given we're talking about a Stone Age culture, that's a pretty enormous city. I mean, and it is a little surprising so far. I don't know how thoroughly the site has been explored. Really, there might actually be some still undiscovered, you know, really cool stone temples and stuff like that, you know, laying around. I don't know.
I've seen video of the site.
Yeah,
and I'm gonna say that I doubt that's the case.
Oh, really? You don't think so?
There may be a lot more to discover, but massive stone temples, big evidence of like whatever, you know, environmental modifications, mound building or whatever. I think they've pretty much figured out that it's not there. Maybe in a different site, I guess.
It sounds maybe massive, it's cleverly hidden. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I've always wondered, again, I assume the smart people have figured this out too, though, but I've always wondered, this seems to be like almost an agricultural settlement that would have served a larger city somewhere close by and supplied food, et cetera, to, you know, a larger city, but maybe not. Maybe
what I think is going on there, and please, if you have more insight into this than I do, get back to me. But I think this is going to ultimately be the kind of thing like another place that I would like to do an episode on called Poverty Point. Obviously, that was not the name of it. We've lost the name of Poverty Point, but it was a site in Mississippi where they didn't really know what it was.
No, they thought it was just some natural hills, right?
Exactly. And what it turned out to be is evidence of a city, a proper settlement, a proper city that was created and maintained by a culture, by a civilization that did not have agriculture. Mm-hmm. This allowed Western researchers to completely overlook it because we see there as being a development, much like the models that we would follow in, say, Babylon or Rome or something like that, right? First, you have a agricultural society, and then you from there build a trade society and a mercantile society, and from there come cities. You don't circumvent that path and have a city based on the notion of trade among hunter and gatherers. But we're finding that in the new world, that is something that can happen. And that upends our definition of how civilization forms and constructs itself to the point where you could have researchers looking right at it and not knowing what they were seeing, whether that's archaeologists in Mississippi in the 19th century or Percy Fawcett in the 20th century. I think that's pretty fascinating, pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's a good point. They had their intellectual blinders on when it came to poverty point. But But still, you know, if they didn't have agriculture, it would be kind of hard to sustain a city, I would think, you know, because the problem is if you have like 50,000 people living in the city and they're all hunter gatherers, you know, they're going to wipe out all the game in a radius around that city pretty quickly.
This is why I am saving Poverty Point for my own episode one day soon, is because we don't really know how they made it work. We just know that they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I say, and to
be fair, there may have been some level of agricultural cultivation going on in Kugu. I keep saying it wrong.
Kugu. Yeah.
There may have been some degree of agricultural cultivation, and to what degree, I honestly don't know, and I'm not sure that it is known.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and obviously if they were farming, you know, the evidence of that would be gone by now too. You know, the jungle covers up everything pretty thoroughly.
Right. Yeah. Right.
But anyway, so the question, of course, the mystery here is just, is this city that they found, is it the Zed that Percy Fawcett was seeking? Or is Z still out there somewhere? I don't know.
I think that's a good question. I personally am pretty satisfied that Kuikugu or a site like it is what Percy Fawcett was looking for. You know, there may have been another Kuikugu out there that Fawcett had been told about and was out there to find. I don't think we're going to be chopping through some vines in the next 5 years and find the massive gold, silver, and stone city that Fawcett was envisioning. That's my opinion.
Yeah. But
hey, I that's an opinion. It could happen very differently.
Yeah, I don't know. The thing about it is all these stories involve gold and silver and gems and all that good stuff.
The lost riches is, I think, part of the attraction.
Yeah. Well, obviously that's lost treasure excites us all, you know? Some of those stories, even that there probably was a little skepticism even back in the day when the Spaniards were taking over the continent and conquering the civilizations there. But then when they like conquered, say, the Incas, they found out that, wow, in this case, at least, the stories were true, which kind of got people, you know, pretty revved up over the other stories of the other cities that they were hearing about. This brings us to our next lost city, which is, I think, one of yours.
It is, yeah, and it's a fascinating one, and really a story that's almost too long even for an episode, much less, part of an episode, but...
Well, yeah, I think we're just going to give it really short shrift here, frankly.
There are some pretty incredible books out there you might want to read.
This is a huge one, yeah.
Yeah. So the legend, we're talking about the legend of El Dorado.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, from the hit movie, animated film with Kevin Kline.
Don't forget the movie El Dorado with John Wayne, which of course had nothing to do with this at all, but it was called El Dorado.
Yeah, it had nothing to do with the lost city of El Dorado.
Yeah.
The legend of El Dorado began in 1535 when Sebastian de Benalcazar, tenant of Francisco Pizarro, who was he's interrogating an Indian warrior who had been captured at Quito. But this is not Quito, Bolivia, or is it?
I'm not sure which Quito we're talking about here. All I know is Quito. Quito.
So it's anyway, he's captured. He's somewhere in New Spain. The Indian told Benalcazar that he was rich from a kingdom. He was from the kingdom and he was rich. It was to the north.
Well, the kingdom was rich. I don't know that he was rich because he was a warrior.
Was he was so rich. He was bragging.
Yeah.
So anyway, okay, look. So basically this guy, they got him. They're sweating him out. And this guy says, I'm from this rich kingdom to the north. It's called Cundinamarca, and where is a tribal chief who has so much gold that he would cover himself in gold dust during ceremonies.
Yeah, that's what you call it's like burning $100 bills to light your cigar kind of behavior, right?
I think that was the idea. Yeah. Just there's just so much of it. Maybe it didn't even hold value to them.
Or it could be, an alternative theory I've had about this is that they found gold dust like in the streams around, and they harvested it and stuff, but they never actually did anything with it. They never actually melted it down and made stuff out of it. They just, got enough gold dust to cover their chief in gold dust for ceremonies. And as far as the rest of it goes, they didn't care. Yeah. I don't think that's actually true what happened here. I think
I doubt it. But yeah. Gold is just a rock, it's just a thing in the ground. And if you don't place value on it, it may not mean much to you.
The only reason that you and I place a lot of value on it is because we know a lot of other people are excited about it, right? Gold by itself, it does nobody any good, really.
Well, I mean, it is. It's a poundable metal. It's very flexible. There's a reason why humans got interested in it, but most of the reason why we care is because it has value to other humans. And if you don't know anyone who really would give you anything for it, it might be of a passing interest at the best. Anyway. Ben Alcazar, he goes all Yosemite Sam, as basically every Spaniard was. An important bit of context here is that the Spanish were pretty sure they were going to find a whole bunch of gold in the New World. And it's not that they found none, but they were never, I think, quite satisfied with the amount of gold they were able to extract from New Spain.
Yeah, and, very true. And I don't think they were as nearly as thorough in extracting it as they were in places like, say, the Philippines, where I think they got their hands on damn near every bit of gold that was in that country at the time and shipped it all back to Spain. It's the Indio Dorado.
Did he actually say that? Is that a quote?
I think that's what he said. It's the Indio Dorado. Let's go find the golden in that golden Indian. Yeah.
Right. So it's important. This is actually one of my favorite things about it that you've cued into in the script here is one of the things I think is so neat about the story of El Dorado is we think of El Dorado in the English speaking world as a city, the city of El Dorado, right? Yeah. He was a person. That's what they called the chief.
Yeah. This mystical chief. They didn't even know the name of the chief, I don't think.
Right. El Dorado would translate to the person, the man of gold.
Yeah, they were looking for the golden Indian, which they started calling El Dorado. But, eventually that became golden one. Yeah.
Probably seems like a fairy tale, but the Spaniards had heard a lot of really fanciful rumors about the Aztecs and the Incas and all of their wealth and had their doubts. But when the Incan Empire was discovered by Francisco Pizarro, the rumors more or less turned out to be true. And this lent some credibility to the story of El Dorado. These are the same guys who were running around Florida looking for the Fountain of Youth. So they liked a good story.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. So this is a huge story, as we said. A lot of blood and time and effort was spent looking for El Dorado, and many books have been written about this whole quest for El Dorado, and it's a fascinating piece of history, really.
It is.
It was never found, of course. It's presumed to be a myth, but I don't know. Is it?
I think we should talk about that more in the sección de teorías.
Well, we can do that. Section. Okay. El Dorado. But
all right, let's hop on to one I am really fascinated by and don't know as much about. So why don't you tell us about Paititi?
Yes. The two we just talked about were some of the more fanciful ones, but they're very well known, so we had to talk about them. But this other one has gotten a bit of press in recent years because of a discovery in 2001. Mm-hmm. And we're talking, of course, about the lost Incan city of Paititi. And not much is known about this city other than there's lots and lots of gold there. In fact, supposedly there was a square lake and these four little lagoons that were in two pairs. And supposedly this kingdom, they took all their gold jewelry and everything and dumped it into these lakes and lagoons to hide it from the Spanish, just in case the Spanish found them. But the Spanish never did find them. So presumably all that gold is still sitting there at the bottom of these lakes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We've got to find a square lake, right?
If that actually happened.
Yeah. We've got to find that square lake. Paititi is believed to be north or northeast of Cuzco, Peru. And it's right about that in that tri-border area where the borders of Peru and Bolivia and Brazil meet. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, right there. So right around that area. It's a little vague. So that part of those countries, like the eastern parts of Peru and Bolivia, as you know, descend into the Amazonian basin. So it's not all Andean highlands there. And down in the jungle. And of course, that's why so many of these cities are lost. Of course, you know, after a few centuries, they're so overgrown. If you actually stumbled across one, you would have no idea that you were even in a lost city. You know.
Oh yeah. Certainly, we know that about the Mayan ruins. You know, they find, you know, like Chichen Itza, there were people all around that site for years, but nobody decided to go hacking through that particular part of jungle. So it just stayed buried.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Another one is Tikal. That was kind of buried in the jungle too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, that's what I've been to both of those places. I got to say, I like Tikal a little better because in Chichen Itza, they did the usual thing. They completely cleared away all the jungle.
Right, right.
Whereas in Tikal, they kind of left the jungle there. They cleared off all the old pyramids and stuff like that, but it's still all in the jungle. And so that makes it kind of cool, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
Yeah, you've been to Tikal, right?
I have not been to Tikal. I've been to Chichen Itza and I've been to Tulum.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Tulum is cool too. Yeah.
Tulum's pretty neat. How it looks out over the ocean is pretty incredible.
Yeah, it is. It's not the most impressive set of ruins I've ever seen, but just the setting is right there in the Caribbean is so, and there's just this little Mayan pyramid right on a cliff overlooking the ocean. It's pretty dramatic, you know, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
Yeah. Well, let's see.
This is the first known reference to Paititi in Western records is from around 1600. And that is when a Jesuit missionary named Andres Lopez was reporting back to the Vatican. And he told the story of a miracle surrounding a crucifix that had been taken to the king of Paititi by some converted natives. While describing this miracle, Lopez provided a description of the city of Paititi, which sounds pretty impressive to me. Of course, he never actually saw it himself. He just was relaying the secondhand account, both the city and the miracle that occurred there.
Yeah. Yeah. So there have been other references to Paititi in historical sources throughout the Spanish colonial period, which, of course, as we know, went on for several centuries. And so there was a lot of these, they contained speculation about the location of the city. They mentioned various expeditions which had gone looking for it. But none of these accounts, to my knowledge at least, are firsthand accounts by anyone who actually saw the place.
Okay.
So this is kind of El Dorado-y in a way, but
yeah.
And what I'd really like the answer to is, do any of these historical tales have different sources? Or are they all based on that same account that Andres Lopez heard and wrote to the Vatican about? I'd really like to know the answer to that one. It's like, you know, or because, you know, if we're all basing everything on just one report from, say, one Indian who talked to this guy, Lopez, who wrote to the Vatican, I don't know. It's pretty sketchy stuff to get excited about. But on the other hand, if there were other reports from other people about this place, then that, you know, it's more worth getting excited about. But we just don't know this. We just don't know. So did Paititi exist? I don't know.
It's hard to say.
Yeah.
Well, the lost city of Paititi kind of fell out of the public eye for a long time, which does not mean that there was nobody looking. There are actually quite a few expeditions in northeast Peru, eastern Bolivia, northwest Brazil, that area, from the mid to late 20th century. At least four intrepid explorers vanished without a trace while looking for it. So that
happens a lot. And this is not counting Percy Fawcett and his party. This is an right. entirely different animal.
We don't think he was looking
here.
For Paititi, did
No,
we?
He was not. Yeah, yeah. I just want to make sure that I lay any possible confusion there. But
that's true.
Yeah, I don't know, man. This thing about the jungle, there's a lot out there that can get you.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, a lot.
Yeah, for sure.
That's why I stay the hell out of jungles, to be honest.
Yeah.
Too many bugs, for one thing.
Dude, I spent some time in the Costa Rican jungle when I lived down there, and the Guatemalan jungles. Mm-hmm. And boy, tree frogs, different plants. They got spiders that'll bite you. It's a tough place, man. You got to be really hardcore. It gave me a lot of respect for the natives of that region to be able to carve out a life and to be able to walk through there hunting and fishing and foraging and gathering. Just, you're basically naked. Like, that's hard. You are a hardcore person if you can do that. So much stuff to step on out there.
Oh, God. Yeah. 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 So, yeah, I must agree. It's just, it's a, that'd be a tough life. But,
right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so let's talk about 1979.
Back to our stories. Yeah.
So in 1979, another explorer couple, Herbert and Nicole Cartagena, went searching for Paititi in southeastern Brazil, in a country I just made up.
Yeah.
In southeastern Peru, when they found the ruins of Mameria, which was an ancient Incan town surrounded by coca plantations. It's generally agreed by archaeologists that Mameria supplied coca to the Incans up in the highlands. So they were growing it down there and taking it up the mountain for them. It's generally thought that Mameria is the first solid evidence of an Incan settlement in the Amazon jungle itself. So it lends some credence to the possible existence of Paititi being an extension of the Incan Empire. And it's also possible that a large city could get hidden in all those nasty jungles we were talking about. Mameria is 15 square miles of buildings and houses. So this is pretty substantial, and that's a lot.
It really is. Yeah. In case somebody was thinking that there couldn't be a lost city out there because we'd see it. Oh, no. Mameria was only discovered in 1979. And it's also possible. I mean, they were growing all this coca. And Mameria is not completely down all the way down at the bottom. It's still kind of up on the mountainside a little bit. But so it's in the jungle, but kind of a transitional area where coca flourishes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's it's entirely possible. It's believed that they were supplying coca to the cities up in the islands. Maybe they were also supplying coca to Paititi or, another city around there.
That's a good point.
Maybe. I mean
15 square miles of village makes for, I mean, a really substantial amount of business to support that many people.
Yeah, that's a lot of, that's a pretty huge workforce. And, so I wouldn't be at all surprised to find out that there was some other city that was also receiving coca shipments from these guys. So, that's Mameria. So anyway, and again, Mameria was found, and, so maybe Paititi is next. See, but there's another explorer who's made all kinds of fairly well-publicized progress, or at least he says so, in finding Paititi. He's been looking for it for decades. And this is a French guy named Thierry Jamin, and I'm probably mispronouncing that. How's your French?
I think it'd be Thierry Jamin.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. Well, anyway, he's got a website. It's still up, by the way, even though he hasn't updated it for several years now. But
we'll get on it, Terry. We're trying to check it out.
Yeah. And so he was like, we're talking late 20th century when he was doing a lot of his stuff and continuing up into the 21st century. But then there was that thing I referred to sort of earlier, which is in 2001, there was a discovery, which was an Italian archaeologist named Mario Puglia. Is that correct?
Mario Puglia.
He found the original Andres Lopez report at the Vatican Archives. From 1600.
I love that. I always love it when someone's, digging around and finds something really amazing that's just, not lost. It just was in some archive somewhere buried.
Oh, yeah. No, I had no idea how well indexed all the stuff in the Vatican Archives is. Probably not that well, or probably parts of it are and parts not,
But, I think you've got it right down. I've actually looked into this. The Holy See, where they keep the Vatican Archives, is kind of a mess. If you remember, we did, well, I forget what we called it, but the lady on the island that the Island of the Blue Dolphin is based off of, when we covered her story.
Is that the one off the coast of California you were talking about?
When we covered her story, they took some of her things that she'd brought from that island that would really help us get some information about that, and they put it in the Vatican Archives, and no one knows if it's lost or just buried down there. And I kind of fell down a rabbit hole of looking into all the stuff that might be down there somewhere.
I know. That is one of all the many things that I would love to see in the world. The Vatican Archives is right up near the top of the list.
They're pretty selective about who gets to poke around down there.
Oh, I know. I'm not even talking about necessarily going down there and, well, I'd want to grab a few books and see what was inside of them. But if they said, Joe, you can go, you can look, you can walk around, you can't touch anything, I would still love to do that.
Oh, in a heartbeat,
Oh, God, that would be fantastic. And I hope it's like, what was it, the there was a second Dan Brown movie with Tom Hanks in it. It was Angels and Demons, I thought.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, they go into the Vatican archives in that movie. And frankly, that was pretty damn sterile. I hope that's not what the archives look like now.
I think some of it might be, but the little thing I was able to dig up when I was researching it for, I'm sorry, I'm spacing on that lady's name, for that episode, it didn't look quite as well organized as that. In fact, it some of it looked downright like they just had banker's boxes full of random stuff and they were trying to go through and archive it.
Yeah. And yeah, so, just from the standpoint of space, and just space and money and everything like that, having everything housed like in these big glass enclosures with tons and tons of wasted space just wouldn't be feasible, seriously. Nope. but
definitely there's I think a little bit of a race against time right now to figure out what's in there, because some of it's not very well preserved.
Yeah, I'm sure plenty of it is kind of
it
rotted
is
away.
Controlled down there. I did glean that bit of info. Sorry, let's talk about what Jamin was up to, because I think Jamin. He found some pretty fascinating stuff.
He did, actually, but something. Time for a commercial. And
I could use a commercial.
Yeah, I could use a commercial break myself, actually. So why don't we do that, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about what Terry Jamin made of this new discovery and his, what his explorations have been, how successful they've been.
Yeah.
Okay.
It might shock you.
It might or might not. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
And we're back. We were just talking about how Maria Puglia, Italian archaeologist, had found the Andres Lopez report, the original in the Vatican archives. And it's nothing. I don't think there's anything in there that we didn't already know. It's got a little more detail, but essentially it describes Paititi as a large city in the Amazon jungle with boatloads of gold, silver, and jewels. So nothing, unfortunately, no more vital clues than that would lead us to where it was. Nothing. And believe me, people have gone over the document pretty thoroughly. And so as far as to the best of my knowledge, it still doesn't give us a really good, solid clue as to where to look. No. But still, it did touch off kind of a new wave of interest, I think. I mean, since that discovery, I think there's been more written about it, at least. And more people have gone out looking for it. But of course, going out and looking for it's a whole different thing. It's easy to write a story about it or do a podcast about it, but actually raising the funds to, to mount an expedition to go out in the jungle looking for it, that could be kind of hard,
Thierry was already hot on the trail of Paititi, and he was even hotter on the trail now. In 2012, he posted on his website, grandpaititi.com. He posted some satellite photos of some really strange, odd-looking, squarish formations in the jungle.
Yeah, it's this one. Yeah, it's like almost like a plateau that's kind of square. Yeah, like a small plateau. Yeah,
no, it's true. It's pretty weird.
You've seen the pictures, right?
I'm actually looking at the website right now.
Yeah,
it does look pretty strange. I mean, I will say that you have to be careful with this stuff because things in nature can sometimes form in ways we don't expect, like the giant pyramid in Antarctica that some people are really into, but it's just a mountain that is shaped like that.
Yeah, I mean, such things can happen. According to him and his website, this is about 800 meters on edge and essentially kind of a square, right? Is that fair?
Yeah.
Not a perfect square entirely, but, So that's close. A fairly hefty, hefty chunk of plateau. That'd make a nice little place to stick your castle or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
So the lake and the lagoons would be basically there. He's saying that they saw a square lake and four nearby lagoons that would resemble ancient descriptions of Paititi. The lake and the lagoons would be, according to legend, where the Inca dumped massive amounts of gold and silver to hide them from the Spanish.
Kind of selfish, you ask me. They didn't want to share.
People like doing that. You know, Nazis were dumping gold in lakes in Austria. The Inca were dumping gold in the jungle. Like, what, you know, you just got to hide your gold, man.
Yeah.
Ask your Sammy Sammy. You got to make sure nobody finds that.
Yeah, that is kind of typical. But in the case of the Indians down in South America, they probably would have had an easier time if they just handed it over to the Spaniards. And the Spaniards wouldn't have needed to kill them all. But
they probably would have done that anyway, knowing the Spanish.
Yeah, maybe. Actually, they didn't kill them all, but they had sex. There's
still plenty of Incas. I shouldn't say they killed them all.
Seem to have lots of sex with quite a few of them, and that's just why we have the mestizos today.
In 2013, Jamin put together an expedition with a group of indigenous guides to go and find the square. Yeah. He claims they got within 30 kilometers before, shucks, they were forced to turn back.
Yeah, well, I know.
That would make
sense. Sorry, this guy keeps putting together expeditions, and then they just kind of...
They never quite sealed
the deal, yeah. So in 2014, there was another expedition. They set out again. They found the going quite rough, just like Percy Fawcett 100 years before. Because, again, as we said, there are approximately 10 billion bugs per square kilometer. And I might be understating that, actually.
Yeah.
And every one of them wants to nibble on you or suck your blood or both. And larger animals want to eat you. Snakes want to squeeze you until your internal organs shut down. They can dine on you at leisure. And natives want to kill you just for trespassing. Plus, the weather sucks. That was another thing about Fawcett in the book. You know, it's like a big part of it is just because they're getting dumped up by rain so much. Their stuff was so soaked, they wound up with foot rot and stuff. You know, just because their feet were always wet.
The thing about the jungle,
you know,
that I can definitely tell you from personal experience is that, you know, it rains every day, but it doesn't have to be raining for you to get rained on. They're so dense that foliage holds that water, and it'll just be dripping on you even when the skies are blue above. It's hard to describe how deeply soaked you get walking around in these dense jungles.
Mm-hmm. So this particular expedition from Terry Chamin in 2014 was stymied because a local tribe refused to allow them to cross their territory. This is probably similar. Probably something like this happened to Percy Fawcett and company. You know, in their time, they probably were in somebody's territory and they got killed for it. You know, I'm sure that kind of thing happens a lot. So anyway, they tried to like reroute around this tribe's territory and they made a good stab at it. At least that's what they say. But eventually they ran out of food and gave up and returned to Cusco. So much for that expedition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But in 2016, Terry Jamin announced to a reporter from Forbes that he and his team were going to use helicopters to reach the Square Mountain that summer. But apparently, I guess they never did.
Apparently not. Yeah, because there was never any news, any news releases about it or anything like that. And then and about 2 years later, in January 2018, he posted on the website, again, grandpaititi.com, he posted, quote, "The whole team of Thierry Jamin, quote, the whole team of Thierry Jamin is currently mobilizing to set up this large-scale expedition whose objective will be to confirm, or not, the presence of Paititi at the top of this strange mountain," unquote. That's about it, though. I mean, the results never published. So apparently it never happened.
Did it ever happen, or did they actually just get down there and be like, oh, that's not it?
As far as I know, it just didn't happen. I don't know why, because I would think that if they had actually made it there, they'd want to tell the world about that, because let's face it, that would be an accomplishment in and of itself.
Yeah, I guess just getting there, but I don't know, I kind of wonder if this Terry guy got there and saw it and was like, oh man, this is just a rock pile. There's nothing here. And then there's
nothing to see.
Like, we will never speak of this moment again.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. His the thing he posted on his website might have been, in a sense, kind of a fundraising ploy. I mean, maybe he thought that, if he put this out there and got enough people, he might attract some investors who would sink some funds into, the expedition, because probably ended up, by himself, he couldn't afford to actually pay for this. And maybe he just didn't get enough people showing up to, you know, fund the expedition, and he had to call it off.
That's possible. That yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It could just be a funding issue.
Oh, yeah. He might have just failed the hype machine. So what do you think, Joe? Do you think Paititi exists?
You would think not, since so many people have been looking so hard and nobody's found it. But, you know, but on the other hand, the jungle, as we said, hides a lot of stuff. I mean,
I'm going to go with that. It's actually probably a similar story to Z or Zed.
Yeah.
Is that I think there's something out there. I think that there was some truth behind what Andres Lopez was talking about, but not, it's not going to be the massive stone arches gilded with gold and silver. It's probably something quite a bit too, you know, a little more basic, a little more in keeping with the landscape and what can be quarried there and brought there and what served that society, that culture the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is true. The and I don't know how easy it is. I know that up in the highlands, coming across stone that you can shape and build massive, impressive structures out of is pretty. It's plenty of it there. I don't know what it's like down in the lowlands of the jungle.
And more than that, Joe, I think you're close, but I think even at that, your framing is a little wrong. Which is up in the Incan homeland in the highlands, wood was a commodity. Mm-hmm. You didn't have a lot of it, and if you wanted big beams, you would have had to drag it up from down below, which is to this day not an easy thing to do. So they learned to build the structures of stone cut out of necessity.
Kind of like the Welsh, you know, go to Wales. I mean, everything's out of stone there too. Same reason. Yeah.
That wasn't really an option out where we live, and people built foundations out of other things. But you'll see these really cool stone foundations instead of brick, because that's what they had to work with, and it was abundant and cheap. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
My guess would be that if you were in a place where timber was abundant and cheap, like the forest, that's probably what you'd mostly be building out of.
Yeah.
And I would guess that Paititi is no exception.
Probably. Yeah. And so that might be one reason is nobody's found it, because it kind of rotted away. I do think that Terry Jamin's Square Mountain is worth checking out. Hard to say if there's a city there or not.
It'd be cool to know what's out there.
Well, you know, it's very likely just a natural formation. And I think that's probably why a lot of people have decided that it's just not worth their time to go looking for Paititi there. But really, when you think about it, even if it is a natural formation, it would be a pretty handy place to build your city of gold, because it's sort of like up above the surrounding territory, surrounded by cliffs on all sides, really. So it'd be very defensible. It's a logical place to build a city.
I'm a big supporter of Jamin. I hope he gets his act together and gets to go out there with a big team and cut away some jungle and check it out, because I'm curious to know what's out there.
Well, I am too. And the thing about it is too, is that if he's out there hacking away at the brush, even if he doesn't find Paititi, he might find something really interesting.
Yeah, exactly. That's the cool thing about exploration, is that when you explore something, you may not find what you set out to find, but you might find something really cool.
You might find something even better. Who knows? Yeah. That would be so cool. Yeah.
All right.
But so that's Paititi. I don't know. So got any other favorite lost cities?
Well, I want to zoom over it real quick, but there's definitely one from the prehistory of this show, dating back to your show.
What's that?
I'm a big fan of.
The Thinking Sideways podcast?
Yeah, from Thinking Sideways. Akakor.
Yes,
I remember. That was a great episode. The Sunken City of Akakor. Episode?
Yeah.
I've been in it for Carl Brugger. That's really my story about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a fun story. Yeah. Well, can you sum up the episode for us real quick?
Sure. Well, so the world learned about Akakor from a book called The Chronicle of Akakor, which was published in 1976, and it was written by a German journalist named Carl Brugger. The book was widely read. It especially was popular with kind of new agey types.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a lot of them got really obsessed with finding Akakor, which was sort of like supposed to be like a mini Atlantis. And there were even several people who went into the Amazon forest looking for it, and they never came back.
Yeah.
Brugger himself.
Recurring theme in these things.
Right? Yeah. A lot of guys lost in the jungle.
So yeah, Brugger himself met with kind of an ambiguous end, didn't he?
He did. It was kind of nuts, actually. So he's walking along a beach in Ipanema in Brazil.
Rio de Janeiro. And say he wasn't in the jungle. He was in civilization.
No.
Yeah.
No, totally. Yeah. Big city all around him. And he's walking on the beach, and a stranger, no one knows who, walked up and shot him dead. and the killer was never caught, and no one really knows why he did it. I kind of have a theory.
Yeah. What's your theory?
Well, Berger was a total con artist, mm-hmm. Which we're going to get into.
Yeah.
But some people thought he was murdered for revealing the secrets of the city that they wanted to stay secret.
Yeah. It does seem like his murder kind of gave the legend of Akakor some legs.
Yeah.
Even though he was not. Yeah. Because it does seem like that. Yeah.
Oh, totally. Carl Brugger himself got the information from an Indian in Brazil named Tatunka Nera, who was the chief of the Ugia Mungalala, which was a hidden tribe that had battled for centuries against the incursions of Europeans into their central homelands.
Yeah, I think by this time they'd kind of fallen on hard times, because at one point, way in the misty distant past, it was a very ancient tribe. They had a massive network of cities and highways all across Brazil. They
were powerful.
Yeah, an incredible tribe.
Mm-hmm.
But by the 1960s, when he met Carl Brugger, they were kind of falling on hard times by that time, right?
Yeah, and he was thinking, this guy Nera was thinking that the only rational course left for them was to make peace with Whitey. And so he came out of the jungle for this exact reason, and he told the story of his people, which went back millennia, to Carl Brugger.
Yeah.
Now, we don't know much about Akakor other than that it was high in a mountain valley somewhere along the Peru and Brazil border, which is right in the same area as Zed and Paititi.
Mm-hmm.
There were two other cities that the Mugia Mungala, I don't know if I'm saying that right, had built,
another one of those friggin' unpronounceable names.
If it's transliterated to Portuguese, the H would be like a yeah sound.
Mungalala.
But I don't know. And I'm not going to worry too much about it, because that's you'll find out. So apparently two cities were still standing, but Akakor was by far the largest and most important, and it was very well hidden.
Yeah. But alas, for all those poor saps who perished in the jungle searching for the lost city of Akakor. Because it turned out that Tatunka Nera wasn't actually an Indian. He was actually a German guy with a deep tan named Hans Richard Gunther Hauck from Bavaria.
Yes.
That's the whole thing about this. It's so hilarious. The guy wasn't even an Indian who was telling tall tales. He was a freaking German.
Yeah, and I don't think Brugger was the only one he conned. I got to do some research. I believe he conned a bunch of people about this crap.
I think so, but he definitely spent a lot of time with Brugger telling the story of his people. Mm-hmm. I have not yet actually gotten around to getting a copy of the Chronicle of Akakor and reading it, but I read a lot of summaries of the book, and it gets pretty, if you want to consider it BS, it gets piled pretty damn high in this book.
I would love to know what language these two Germans were sitting around speaking to each other.
Well, here's the deal, is that Tatunka Nera, actually Hans Hauck from Bavaria, Tatunka said that he spoke German because some German sailors and soldiers and stuff had actually sailed up the Amazon in U-boats
U-boats.
They didn't. They weren't submerged. I assume they were not submerged U-boats, but they basically deserted Germany and sailed across the ocean and went up the Amazon and met up with these people and decided that after getting to know Tatunka and his people, they decided that they wanted to throw in their lot with him and protect them from civilization. So they became. They developed this sort of alliance with these Germans, who had some technological knowledge that actually came in pretty handy in their battles against civilization encroaching. And so that is how Tatunka Nera, Indian chief, came to learn German. So I think their conversations were basically in German.
It's so funny, two guys sitting around talking German, be like, "Oh yeah, tell me about my native civilization."
But the actual story behind Hans Hauck from Bavaria, turns out he skipped out of Germany in 1966 because he was far behind in his child support payments, and he was looking at maybe getting prosecuted for it. So he decided to leave Germany, and eventually got to Brazil, where he started learning Portuguese and started working on his tan. But
So
yeah, everything he told Brueger was BS. Although I don't know, maybe at some point Brueger figured it out, but decided, what the hell, I'm going to just publish a book anyway, because what the hell, you know? I don't know if he totally hoodwinked Brueger, or if Brueger actually knew that this was BS. I really don't know.
I've always kind of suspected Brueger was a little bit in on it.
Yeah. But I really don't. I'm not sure.
I guess I don't have any evidence for that. It's just a suspicion.
Yeah. But Tatanka Nera, Indian chief, with a German guy with a deep tan, he actually did some other stuff. Some people showed up after the book was published and tracked him down and offered to pay him money to guide them into the jungle to find the lost city. And at least a couple of those people never returned. And so there was some suspicion on Hans Hauck, that I don't think they ever managed to prove anything, you know. But
I kind of wonder if Brueger was going to rat on Hauck, and that's why he got capped on Ipanema Beach.
That's possible too. Yeah, maybe Brueger knew too much. Yeah, but
yeah, I kind of wonder about that.
So it's an interesting little story. Somebody should like make a movie out of that or something, you know?
Actually, yeah, I watched a documentary about it a while ago that it was pretty fascinating. It was a good document. It was really well done. But I think actually a movie would be really interesting.
A movie could be quite fun.
Like a narrative film.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So Joe, we're running up on time, so let's rock it through some theories.
Yeah,
some serious theories.
Hey, well, we got theories about several different things. Of course, you know, our theory about the sunken city of Akakor, we can put that one to rest right now. I think that there's no chance that sunken city actually exists. Would you agree with me on that one?
Although, how funny would it be? Like, oh, actually, no, everything else about Hauck was garbage, but Akakor, he actually was right about that. It's really out there. It's the only one of these that's really real.
Yeah, no, I think, if he was right about it, it would just be like utterly coincidental, you know?
I think there's no Akakor. I think we can set that one aside.
No, I think given his general, the nature of his character, if he had hard evidence of a lost city like that, he would have sold it. He wouldn't have just given it away for free. You know what I'm saying?
True. You know, that's true.
But again, at the same time, you know, suppose he describes his city and he makes it all up, but just coincidentally, there happens to be a city kind of like that about where he said it was. I mean, that could happen. Stranger things have happened, but no, I don't think Akakor exists. So that leaves us with only three cities here. We've got Z, El Dorado, and Paititi.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we got for a theory? What do you like?
Well, one theory is that all this is just a bunch of bull crap.
Yeah.
So just kind of to break it down, I think Paititi has the most adherence.
Yeah.
But the legend seems to be based on this one story that Andres Lopez was told.
Yeah, that's the thing that I can't get is like, I don't know that there's any other sources for this. I mean, there might be, but I just don't know. I mean,
yeah, and I think you're right about that. I think you're really keying into something I hadn't really thought much about, which is that one guy gets told one story by one person, and we're supposed to take that as credible.
Yeah.
And the truth is we would ask for more evidence than that in something else.
Well, some of these other accounts, I mean, they might've heard it from somebody else, but they didn't, but I'm not realizing that the person they heard it from had heard the Lopez account. So they're thinking like, oh, we got confirmation from another source, but it actually isn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there could be some of that going on. I don't know. I mean, I definitely, had I been the Spaniards back at that time, and I heard this story about this, I would have been like, I would have been interrogating a lot of different Indians about it. That's another thing too, is that maybe these were some of the other sources for, accounts about Paititi. And maybe these were Indians under, you know, intense interrogation, AKA torture. And they just decided to tell these guys whatever they wanted to hear. you know what I mean?
There's a chance about that.
Yeah. I mean, and so, but another possibility too is that remember the Andres Lopez story that he was relating was about a miracle that took place in this city. So it might have been that a few Indian converts to Christianity were kind of eager to please the Jesuits and made up this story about a miracle. They might have juiced up the story just a little bit by setting the story in this magnificent, rich city And it's a city that's so rich that people just discarded gold trinkets so you and me throw away our cigarette butts. You know, that's how friggin' rich these people are, man. So it could have been something like that.
Yeah, I think that's possible.
Let's not forget that the Andres Lopez story is about a miracle, not just about the city. So
no, there's more to it than just the existence of the city, which I think is what we get really focused on. It's what I get focused on.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's got the gold. And yeah, who cares about a friggin' miracle? But I don't know. But at the same time,
I think there's another theory. This is kind of the one I embrace, which is that Paititi might be real, kind of like Zed.
Yeah.
But it would probably be maybe a bit of a disappointment in terms of the treasure and grandeur of the place that,
you know, entirely. Yeah.
You know, Troy was considered to be a myth until a crazy German unearthed it and nearly destroyed it.
He wasn't actually a certified archaeologist. He used kind of brute force methods to excavate it. Unfortunately,
yes, he did, and it's unfortunate.
It is. I got to say, in his defense, so nobody believed him. Nobody was willing to help him or fund him. So he had he probably didn't have a lot of choice. He didn't. It's not like he had like huge legions of unpaid graduate students out there with their trowels and their toothbrushes to help him.
So
maybe he didn't have any choice, but it's really a shame though that,
but kind of, as I said earlier, I get the feeling that Paititi might actually really be out there or something like it. I mean, they may have never even called it Paititi. That might've been just a word some Incan made up, but, there may be another lost city out there. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised at all if there was one.
No,
I do think that like the magnificent temples and gold and stuff, that's probably not there. It's probably not what Lopez was envisioning or what Fawcett was envisioning.
Yeah. Maybe it's just kind of a slum, you know? it's the Gresham
of lost cities.
Yeah. Instead of magnificent temples and pyramids, all there is like liquor stores and like the porn theaters and stuff. Yeah.
It's like an outlet mall that has nothing good in it.
It's like the outlet mall that's, reached that stage in its existence where almost all the retailers have left, and now they're just a Halloween store, you know.
That's
really sad. That's kind of the end of the life cycle there. When you go through the Halloween store period,
it's all over when the Halloween store moves in.
Do that for a couple
the
of years.
Reaper of retail. All right, let's talk about one more.
So it's another theory. What is this one?
Paititi. It's basically kind of a riff on that. Paititi's out there. But it's called something else, and it's nowhere near where everyone thinks it is.
Yeah. This is actually kind of reminiscent to me of what we talked about 2 weeks ago, Operation Mincemeat.
Yeah, I can see that.
Maybe it was a disinformation operation.
That would be smart.
Yeah, so we know that the Incans, like if they had a really beautiful, rich city like this, they would want to keep it a secret. So why not send all the Spaniards off to somewhere where the city isn't? Have them beating the brush out there, you know, endlessly for, you know, forever. When the real city, the real Paititi, which of course is called something else, it's probably called Detroit, you know, or Portland. Yeah. But, And so maybe the story that was told to Andres Lopez was a fabrication, again, designed to send them off on a wild goose chase.
I think that's possible. I don't know that I find any evidence for that, but
absolutely no evidence. This is just spitballing. You know,
yeah, but I think it's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
It'd be a smart thing to do.
Yeah, it really kind of would be because I mean the Indians, or not the Indians, the Spaniards by this point were pretty psyched about this whole lost city of gold thing. And again, they found that the Aztecs and the Incas had quite a bit of booty laying around. They had to be thinking, hey, there's more lost cities and empires and stuff like that. We can go conquer and take all their gold. And the Incans, who were not stupid, figured this out and thought, well, let's just give them a little misdirection, you know, so they don't find this city or that city. You know? Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. I'm not against it.
Yeah.
So which one of those do you embrace, Joe?
I'm kind of like thinking most likely it's number two, which is Paititi is probably does really exist. But it'll turn out to be a bit of a disappointment when we actually do find it. And yeah, stay tuned because I mean, you know, people are still out there looking, and even if they don't find it again, they might find something else equally cool. So, you know, stay tuned and all that stuff. But anyway, so sorry for the inconclusive ending here, kids. You know, that's the thing about lost cities. I find them fascinating personally, but yeah, but unfortunately they tend to stay hidden. Have you noticed that?
I did a little research, but I did a little research into lost cities that have definitely been found, and there are
there's a number
of them. We tend to stop thinking of them once we locate them. I was looking into Tamgad, I believe is how you say that. It was a Roman city on the edge of the Sahara that was thought to be lost.
Yeah.
It's been unearthed. It was massive. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
They call it the Pompeii of the desert, and that was found. And then, of course, there's always the lost city of Zinj, where the gorillas guard the blue diamonds.
Oh, yeah, from Congo. I love that. Yeah.
Our repeated invocations of Congo is becoming a weird theme on this show.
That kind of is. I really enjoyed that book. It was a fun read.
It was. Yeah. Stupid, but so fun.
No, it is a fun book. If you want a good, entertaining read, I highly recommend that book, Congo by Michael Crichton. Do read it. It's good.
Yeah. It's a quick read. It's a beach read.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Totally. I think we better wrap this episode up.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. Let's wrap it up then. Okay. Well, anyway, first of all, be sure to stay tuned to listen to Tess tell you all about how to find us on social media and stuff and or on email. And, you know, if you have a favorite lost city that you want to talk about, please shoot us an email about it.
We'd love to hear what you got to say. We could do a two-parter if we missed your favorite one.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if we get enough of that, yeah, we'll put together another episode. Or maybe a bonus episode. I don't know. But see what else.
Of course, get back to murder.
Yeah, I know. I seriously, this wasn't nearly shocking enough. I'm sorry, folks, but you know we can't be shocking.
We'll
all
get
the time.
More blood in the next one. I promise.
Oh yeah, no, it's gonna be gory as hell. Let's see what else. Oh yeah, of course, the usual plea to leave us a rating and a review wherever you may get this show from. A good rating and a good review, and that's about it, I guess. Yeah.
All right. Well, we will catch up with you next week. Give us a good review. We need the reviews, guys.
Yeah. Come on. We need better than, just, and don't be shy about creating phony logons
people do that. It's unethical. Yeah. And most of our listeners haven't given us a review from their primary account. So, you know, make sure that happens first.
Yeah, guys, come on. Yeah. It doesn't have to be a long review. I mean, seriously, just a couple of sentences, one sentence. You know, hey. What is the minimum length for a review anyway?
I don't know that there is one.
Two words? Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, those two words better not be "it sucks." We don't want to hear that kind of review.
No, don't do that to it.
Yeah, it rocks. Right. That's okay. You know.
That would be okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Joe and Vincent are the sexiest men on the planet. That's okay. but anyway, whatever. Be creative, but positive. Okay. Positive. All right. I guess that's
it. Until next week.
How do they say it in Incan? Arrivederci.
I don't know.
Yeah. Ciao.
Ciao.
Okay. All right. We'll see you next week. Bye.
The Shocking Details can be found at www.theshockingdetails.com. We're on Twitter at Shocking Details. For discussion of episodes and more, our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/shockingdetailspodcast/. Or you can email us at theshockingdetailspodcast@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, please consider giving us a like and a positive review and letting people know about us.
You've worked hard for what you have, your money, your assets, your 401k and home. Isn't it all worth protecting? Nearly one in four consumers have been a victim of identity theft. LifeLock Ultimate Plus helps protect your finances with up to $3 million in reimbursement. LifeLock alerts you to identity threats you might miss. And if your identity is stolen, your dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. Let LifeLock help protect what you've worked so hard for. Save 25% off your first year on LifeLock Ultimate Plus at LifeLock.com/aware. Terms apply.